I'm Faith Middleton. This show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk with our vet, Todd Friedland, about animal companions. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You might be able to tell we have Jack here, Jack Mack, as we call him. This is Laurie Mack's dog. He's a Romagnola, which is an Italian truffle hunting dog, and Laurie got this dog from Linda Juca and Bob Zemel. Oh, yes, you're taking Jack out now because he's had it with us.
He's whining.
In the studio. It's just the most adorable dog. So smart. They're so smart. Honestly, yep. Amazing. Gorgeous. So, Todd, here is the thing. You could be charged with driving while under canine influence.
Oh, that's a good way to say it.
So there is a proposal in Connecticut, a proposal for a law. Explain what's happening. This is the dog in your lap.
Okay, yeah. There's a Senate bill now that is proposing that driving with a dog on your lap will be distracted driving. So the same as texting or talking on a telephone or all those other things that our listeners shouldn't be doing while they're driving. And that's one part of the bill. And the second part of the bill brought forth by another legislator is that not only should they not be on our laps, but they should be restrained in some way with a seatbelt, which do exist. Seatbelts for all size dogs, and they're designed to go harness-like around the dog and then clip into – some of them clip around the seat and some of them clip into the I'm doing it with my hands, but into the regular clip that a seatbelt clip would go into to restrain the dog.
How would a dog react to that?
I used one for my dachshund who wanted to be in my lap all the time, and he just figured it out and laid down. But, you know, I think that the secret's going to be up. I think it's a training issue for an older dog, and it's a this is life for the younger dog. You know, this is what life's going to be like in the car. And so I've been thinking about this. I've really given this a lot of thought.
Do you think that the dog in the lap of the driver is a real distraction?
My dachshund was. My Shih Tzu was like having a pillow on my lap. However...
So it depends on the dog.
I think it depends on the dog and the person. But one of the things that when I've been thinking about this, and I know that I would be a proponent of this bill. But over 40 some odd years of being a veterinarian, I would do it for a different reason. I had never, in my own experience, there are other veterinarians that may have different experiences, but in my own experience, I never was aware that a dog caused an accident. But I was aware of the injuries that dogs suffered flying around in a car that was in an accident.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And one dog being squeezed in an airbag because look at where the dog and the airbag are. They occupy the same space in the car, really. So, and the dog was pretty well bruised by the airbag. And the owner was bruised by the dog that hit her when the airbag hit the dog. So I like this bill a lot. I don't think anybody needs to have a dog on their lap. I know they may want to, but I don't think they need to. And if it was the 8-pound dog, maybe that's different than the 60-pound dog. You've seen it with the dog sitting in front of the people and the dog's head out the window, which is another show we can do about dogs' heads out the window. But I like it. I like the bill, and
you like the part that has a calls for the seatbelt.
The seatbelt. I like that a lot to help the dogs from being injured.
Wow. Well, all right. Here's as we know. I can't wait to get to this subject too. keeping chickens is trendy, usually for the eggs or the meat, but there is a new breed of chicken keeper interested in the birds as pest control agents. So Dr. Friedland is here with us, and here's the deal with these chickens. Chris Prosperi, who's on the Food Schmooze with me, says that he knows people in Goshen, Connecticut, who keep chickens, not so much for the eggs, that's just sort of a byproduct, as for the pest control. So these people have, as many people in Goshen do, millions of deer in the yard, at least it seems that way, and the fields and grass are awash in ticks. So they let the chickens run loose because they eat ticks, especially Lyme ticks, all day long. How common is this?
Oh, very. I mean, you say there's people in Goshen. I'll tell you that I had meant scores of clients that kept chickens for the insect control because that's what they like to eat. They're very, very good at it. Not only the ticks, but the grubs. And I told Faith my story, my chicken story. I had chickens for several years when I lived in Lebanon. And one of my greatest pleasures was going through my roses and my peonies and other flowers and picking Japanese beetles off. And it would have a handful of Japanese beetles. Chickens really like those. They really like those. So that was, as I said, told you earlier, I never found a chicken food that the chickens liked as much as Japanese beetles.
So they're bug maniacs.
They are bug maniacs. Now, guinea hens are the best. Guinea hens are a smaller chicken. They're not a chicken you might raise just for meat. They lay small eggs so you can eat the eggs. It's just, you know, it's just a fowl egg, F-O-U-L. And but lots of people do this, and it's wonderful.
Here's the question. Yeah. I don't know if there's research on this, but I think a vet told the family that we're thinking of here to be very careful eating the eggs from the chickens during the season when the high season for ticks. Now, what would the transmission be there?
I can't even imagine, other than the fact that that chickens have ticks also. Chickens have ticks. You know, birds spread ticks as well. So so maybe there's ticks in the chicken house that this person was talking about. But as far as, I mean, it's a white, shiny egg. If there's a tick on my white, shiny egg or a blue, shiny egg or brown egg, I'm going to see that tick. But again, I'm not a chicken farmer. But I talk to my clients all the time. I live in Windham. We have chicken farmers everywhere. I never heard that.
See,
I can't imagine why.
It had me wondering. We eat venison and deer are, you know, walking tick mobiles.
Right.
We eat rabbit, the same thing.
But you can eat ticks. They won't give you Lyme disease.
Uh-huh.
You can eat any tick you want if you're so inclined.
Well, why not?
Why not?
Why doesn't that give you Lyme disease?
Well, the tick has to bite you and transfer the bacteria into your bloodstream. So presumably, these ticks are dying in your stomach.
But don't the ticks have the bacteria in them?
Inside them, but that bacteria has to get into your bloodstream. And I'm not even Well, no, because the bacteria is probably like many bacteria, bigger than you can absorb from your gut into your bloodstream.
This is like how many angels on the head of a bin.
Something like that, yes. So I'm not worried about eating ticks. We've probably eaten ticks inadvertently by picking berries. Who knows? I don't have any idea.
But here's the thing. These ticks that are on all these creatures we just named, why don't they have Lyme disease?
Well, let's talk about just the simple thing that I had experienced
cats. Or why aren't they being
bitten? We think cats either cats have a natural resistance to Lyme disease, or they're so fastidious in grooming that they just come in the house and groom the ticks and spit them out. So you get Lyme disease as these ticks crawl around your house. So the deer are resistant to the Lyme disease. To my knowledge, I'm not a deer doctor, but I've never heard of a deer having Lyme disease either. But horses, you don't want to have a horse have Lyme disease. It's over $1,000 a month just for the medication. I don't know how to stop it, but
They're in the fields where the deer are.
I have not found a barbed wire fence that will keep a tick out yet. So, my staff, I had a bunch when I was working. I had a whole probably five or six horse owners as staff, and they were constantly treating their horses for Lyme disease. So horses are not resistant. I don't know. I'm sure that since dogs can get it, I would imagine that coyotes and canine-related breeds species can get it. But basically, the tick has to bite you to transmit the disease. So I imagine you could eat the ticks. We're making this up.
And what would stop certain animals are resistant? Because you would think if these ticks are on these creatures, they must be biting
them. But not every bacterial disease affects people where it might affect dogs. You know, there's species specificity in many of these germs, unless you listen to Colin McEnroe's show about an hour ago. Yes, I did hear that. It was fascinating. But I have a great trip down here every time, down from Mansfield here, and I get to listen to Colin on the way. It's just the way the thing works. It's transmission and the stage in which the tick is living, because they go through these mutations during their lifestyle, and deer don't get that. Mm-hmm. However, going back to this, when I used to take care of deer, we'd take a deer out of a cage because I used to do some rehab for deer, and there would be literally tens of thousands of deer ticks on the bottom of that cage. So chickens are good. Let's go back to chickens.
Tens of the Lyme
deer
ticks?
Yeah, Lyme ticks, deer ticks. I mean, it was amazing. We could not believe what we found every time.
And so, what would you do to get rid of them?
Well, first you take the whisk broom and just your normal whisk broom, and you sweep them in a pile, and then you put them in something, and then we'd spray that something with something that would kill those ticks, and then we would spray the cage with whatever would kill the ticks that we had on hand.
That's,
I mean, tens
scary.
Of thousands.
That
no,
is
enough
so scary.
Enough to take out a whisk broom.
That is unbelievable. So imagine in your yard.
Oh yeah, just tons. So dropping. Going back to chickens, if you there's a zoning issues in some town, but the cities are now zoning in backyard chickens for people to have.
But how many chickens would you need to handle? When you just described one deer in a cage,
right?
And thousands of ticks have fallen off.
I think I will tell you that my.
So how many chickens would you need to eat in a yard?
One of my former nurses has. Depending on what the fox and the raccoons eat out of her chicken coop, she has about somewhere 6 to 10 chickens at any given time. And she thinks that they take care of her acre of fenced-in area where the chickens can live. So what do chickens do? They just eat all day. That's what they do. They eat and that's what they do.
Okay, here we go. 203-776-9677 here on the show. Dr. Todd Friedland, our visiting vet, is here. 203-776-WNPR. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. I had a quick question about the dog leashes.
Yeah.
I have a 235-pound Mastiff. Do they make leashes that could fit an animal that size?
You're talking about leashes or collars?
Seatbelts.
I would imagine. I mean, again, I haven't looked. I had a 10 or 11 pound dachshund, but I would imagine that they do. And if they don't, and you'd have to go online and find out. If they don't, I would imagine that, because some of them are just connected to a leash. They're just basically protecting your dog from becoming a missile and getting in your lap. I would imagine that just like there's a seatbelt extender on the airlines, which I saw in operation last night a couple times. There are probably ways to extend that seatbelt, and I would talk to the company because you don't – I mean, I applaud you for having that dog because they're just wonderful, wonderful dogs, but you can't be the only one, and I'm guessing that somebody makes extra large seatbelts.
Jeremy, how many pounds?
235.
That's more than I weigh.
So how do you control?
We even have to make his collars.
Sure.
We can't find collars big enough.
Sure.
How do you keep control of this dog?
He's actually very docile. He doesn't try to run away or pull or anything like that. They're very just sweet, docile animals.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Except for a few breeds that are bred to be a little aggressive, giant breeds. The giant breeds are usually just the easiest dogs to have.
Wow.
Yeah. And I outweigh him, so.
Well, you outweigh the dog. I would say that dog's 30 pounds heavier than I am.
You have your own special seat belt.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy. Glad you called.
All right.
Good luck. Bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR. We're going to take a short break here on the show, and then I'm going to tell you about this brand-new research, thanks to Dr. Todd, about dogs that can read our facial expressions. They can tell our emotions. It's very, very interesting. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks so much for listening. Dr. Todd Friedland, our vet in Connecticut, is back on the show with us. And we email back and forth every once in a while. So this time an email came yesterday, and Todd said, you have got to see this. There is a study out. This was you forwarded this article from Science Daily. This is a study, and it was in the current issue of Current Biology. And I'm going to quote from this study a little bit, and then let's talk about it. Dogs can tell the difference between happy and angry human faces. This is a discovery that represents the first solid evidence that an animal other than humans can discriminate between emotional expressions in another species. This is what the researchers have said. I'm quoting from the article, "We think the dogs in our study could have solved the task only by applying their knowledge of emotional expressions in humans to the unfamiliar pictures we presented to them," says Corsten Müller of the University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna.
I think this was a fascinating study. You know, now that I'm not working, I don't have to look at stuff that's up to date on animal care, specific new drugs. So I scan the internet for these kind of things. And this is amazing. And, you know,
they tried this before and it didn't work.
It didn't work. And many of the studies were having the person stand in front of them. So there's not only facial language, there's body language. With this study, they not only showed the faces, but they showed parts of the faces. So that the dog, there's a couple pictures in that study where they would show only above the nose,
yes,
or only below the nose.
I'm looking at the pictures of
them. And so, and showing the dogs only that part of the body, but all of us, I would imagine, our expressions of our eyes and the wrinkles and everything that goes with it are different when we smile than when we frown. And these dogs could pick it up.
It says here that these dogs were able to select the angry face from the happy face. It was far beyond random chance because of the way they did this test.
Yeah.
I'm quoting again one of the people from the study. "Our study demonstrates the dogs can distinguish angry and happy expressions in humans. They can tell that these two expressions have different meanings. And they can do this not only for people they know well, but even for the faces of people they have never seen before."
May I editorialize just a little? That's why it drives me crazy, and I know you told me it did to you, that people, quote unquote, in quotes, talk to their friends where they actually only push a keyboard on a little telephone, because facial expressions, I mean, we just learned that these dogs knew facial expressions. You can tell so much. I'm looking at you right now, and you're so amazed by this study. I wouldn't know that any other way. You know, it's fascinating. So now they have a dog. We don't know about chimpanzees, and we don't know about anything else. We have these dogs, and they actually recognize it. And where they're going to go with this, I don't really know, but I found this to be fascinating.
Yeah, so we're reading them, they're reading us.
Well, I would imagine, let's put ourselves home now, okay? I come home, and I'm grumpy because I had a bad day. My dog knows something's different than when I came home yesterday because I won the lotto.
Here's the confusing thing. Behaviorists tell us, you can't tell a dog not to do something, you know, 20 minutes later, even 5 minutes later. They have forgotten. They don't associate the two things together. So it's false training or false correction. But if the dog is looking at your face and when you discover the thing, doesn't the dog know, oh, I see now my human is furious?
I've had that experience myself with my dogs.
Which experience?
Just looking at my dog and the dog going like, whoa, you know, and maybe cowering. Why? Because maybe you discipline the dog every time your face looked like that. Following that became discipline. Well, dogs aren't stupid. You asked me if Mastiffs are smart, Jeremy's dog Mastiff. I think most dogs are way smarter than we are. Look how many more tricks we do for our dog than our dog does for us.
Pat Faith Middleton with Dr. Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a Truth is Stranger Than Fiction story regarding ticks. Our son was about 4. He's now 31. And I took a tick off of him when I was blow-drying his hair. And I brought it downstairs. We live in Dutchess County, the land of ticks. Mm. And I was going to take it to the tick lady, we used to call her, to see if it carried Lyme. And I took my son to nursery school. I put the tick in a paper cup, put it on a dining room table. I took my son to nursery school. My husband came downstairs, had his breakfast, went off to work, and I came home, and I was like, you know, where is that cup?
Oh, no.
He had, I said, you know, I called him, and I said, did you see a paper cup on the table? And goes, yeah, I thought that was really nice that you put it out for me for my orange juice.
Wow.
So he drank the tick.
So you have a laboratory experiment about this.
Yes, I do. And he is perfectly healthy.
Well, yes. And I wonder where that tick is, because I'm not sure that tick stayed in the cup.
Really? Oh.
Okay. And we've talked about this on previous shows. Deer ticks can live for up to 17 years without a meal.
So the tick is in your vacuum cleaner.
So how am I doing? Wow. So am I making your day or what?
17 years?
My husband getting Lyme yet, right?
No, he's not going to get not unless it's stuck on his lip. But I think
17 years.
And if it was truly a deer tick, he might not have even, he could have looked in the cup maybe and not seen it.
This is like an edition of Weird Science today.
Minute. It was, you know, as big as a straight pin.
I hear you. I've seen them.
Well, Pat, thank you so
much. I'm glad your husband's okay.
You're so welcome.
All right. Glad you called. Bye-bye. 203-776-WNPR. So Elvis, last month, it was would have been his 80th birthday. And there were celebrations all over the world. People who like Elvis probably saw that. Or even if you don't like Elvis, it was hard to miss.
Anyway.
So we have, first of all, we have the story posted about the dogs and the expressions at our website. So that's the Faith Middleton Show at WNPR.org. And we've also posted this because there is this very clever person in New York who runs a shop called Cause for Paws. It's a thrift store in Manhattan for dogs. And they do something every single year, or several things. They're just brilliant at promotion. So this time, Cause for Paws decided to have an Elvis contest. So people were invited, and they competed. People were, invited to dress their dogs up in Elvis costumes,
now,
and they did.
Right. The only thing I don't remember is the dog that they pictured, was that the winner? Do you know?
Well, that's what I wanted to
know. If I were picking...
It doesn't say it's the winner.
If I were picking the Elvis winner, it would be a black dog. This is a very fair-colored dog that's on the picture that I saw. Are we looking at the same picture?
Well, so, yes.
Okay, so it's a...
Karuna.
Yeah, so it's a fair-colored dog, but anyway, it's a picture of a dog dressed like Elvis with the sunglasses and whatever. So, I think this is really creative. There are people that object to dressing up dogs, and those people can have their objections. But this is a thrift shop that uses the money they bring in for whatever they do for
and
dogs.
And I guess one of the judges is very opinionated because the judge said, I did see one of the contestants came and they had the black dog and the hair all slicked back. And I purposely did not choose that dog because the dog looked uncomfortable.
Okay, that's
so
terrific.
Opinions,
because
absolutely.
I would have picked a Gordon Setter and just kind of slicked back his hair myself if I did that. But I think people, I just love the creativity that people have.
Yeah, and the things that people do with dogs is just astonishing to me. I remember years ago I did this piece for Connecticut Public Television. That thing must have run a billion times because it was about a dog who's no longer with us, Boomer, this golden retriever who loved to do two things, climb into a hammock and go to sleep and run at full speed down to the dock at the family's, there in a lake, and leap into the water, 6 feet high, splash, crash into the water, swim out to a big truck inner tube, climb on it, curl up on it, and it close its eyes. Boomer would. He just close his eyes, and he would go to sleep. And I had this on film. And he would just float around in the sun, just as happy as could be. It was his favorite thing. I thought they trained him. They said, well, he kind of did it himself, and then we encouraged him. And
right. He
was like a member of the family. I mean, truly.
Yeah, pet issues, any issues with pets just attract, as you said, millions and millions of people. I always use an example. There was a kennel somewhere near our area that was basically, they were given a dog to take care of, and the dog was very sick, and there was no message given that the dog could have a crisis, and it did, and it passed away. And this was 30 years ago. And to this day, people would say to me when I was in the office, yeah, well, I don't want to go there because of that. Now, that was truly, it was just, all right, so let me shorten this up a bit. Somebody can leave a baby on a park bench, and nobody knows who that person is anymore after, 2 weeks? But if they left a pet or did something with a pet, that lingers forever and ever. And it's just fascinating how pets attract people that way.
Eric Faith Middleton with Dr. Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you this afternoon?
We're great, thank you.
Okay, I just have a fast question. I've owned many dogs in my lifetime. I've owned Labs, Whippets, German Shepherds. I am an asthmatic, and I have allergies to some things. Sometimes when a certain dog will lick me, I break out in hives, but sometimes it does not happen. Well, my question is, we're thinking about maybe getting a small dog, like say like a Jack Russell Terrier size. What size a small dog has less dander?
Okay, so let's talk first about you visiting a house that has Jack Russell Terriers and make sure you want one of those dogs. Okay, that's an ever-ready battery on steroids. My favorite dog, but I'm just telling you, make sure that you like this dog before you buy the dog because they are cute. The answer to – here's the process. There are proteins in the saliva that get on the hair coat that then come out in the dog dust, in the dander. So you are allergic to – and these proteins differ from dog to dog, species to species, yeah, by a little – I mean breed by breed. So you are allergic to certain dogs and not other dogs. That's really what this boils down to. My suggestion to you is to – because I can't give you a breed other than maybe the Mexican hairless, which I don't think you want. I can't really give you the breed, but I can tell you to do what I told hundreds and hundreds of people to do, and it worked, is to go find the breeder of the breed you want and tell them the situation and that you want to spend a couple hours with their dogs. And if you have a problem, that's not the dog for you. And if you don't, you want a dog from that house. Does that make sense to you?
That's what I would do because
I can't tell you what breed. You know, poodles, Cairn Terriers, whatever. But if you happen to get a family of Cairn Terriers that you're allergic to the protein that's in their saliva, you're not going to be happy.
Mm-hmm. So it could be individual to you.
So spend some time, at least as much time as you spend buying a car. You know, I mean, that's okay.
Okay, Matt.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So clearly we are allergic to dogs and cats. Are cats and dogs ever allergic to humans?
I had two patients. One belonged to a nurse in my hospital and one that was just a random one of my patients. And we had terrible allergy problems with these dogs. So we allergy tested them. Now, allergy testing is not an exact science in dogs, just like it's not an exact science in people. But these two, we seem to resolve the highest result allergy issues in both these dogs by eliminating certain things from their environment. And they've still had problems. And it turned out that we asked for testing for human dander. And sure enough, both of these dogs, they were years apart, but both of these, one of them is still alive. And both of these dogs were highly allergic to humans. So, yes, it does exist. And it's a problem. Because if it's a problem that I think is solvable. I'm pretty sure that the allergy companies could make a serum and try to hyposensitize your dog, meaning the shots.
Well, what did these people do?
Just put the dog outside every single day it could possibly be outside, and we and so that's what we did. In other words, minimize the exposure to humans.
Wow, that's so fascinating.
Yeah, but why not? I mean, when you think about the big picture, why not? They can be allergic to any protein. And it's in human skin is one of them.
But you don't see that very often. That's pretty rare.
I saw it twice in my career that I know about. Now, remember, allergy testing is $200 to $500. So not everybody would be willing that we were treating. We would treat the symptoms, but we couldn't find out what we were actually treating. So it's not one of the most – it's not one of the top 10, that's for sure.
We're going to talk about frostbite. We certainly have had the kind of weather where that's scary for humans, and now it turns out that's also scary for dogs and cats. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. Caitlin, hi. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. I have a large dog, 75-pound lab mix, and she has torn her ACL.
Okay.
And my vet that I bring her to is a very nice man, and he recommended a suture surgery, and my cousin, who's a that tech, was telling me that that's not the right thing, and so I started researching, and it just seems like there's a million options out there, and I'm not sure what to do, so I was wondering if you had any advice on that.
Okay, I just didn't understand the surgery that was recommended. Can you tell me that again, or is it just surgery?
It's the surgery that my vet recommended was the simple suture.
Correct.
And my cousin is telling me, no, you need the TPLO.
Okay. So this depends. I've done hundreds upon hundreds of cruciate surgeries over the years. I do not do TPLOs. You have to – and actually there's another procedure now that TPLO's kind of lost its favor, but it can be done and it's fine. And it takes an orthopedic surgeon to do that. If your dog is an everyday house dog, I would recommend doing the suture technique. And that's what I recommended every single time. If your dog is a performing dog, you might want to think about the TPLO. The suture technique is compared to the older techniques and compared to the TPLO, it is quite traumatic. Certainly more expensive, usually about double what it would cost to do the suture. If it were my own dog, I would do this because if I have a dog, it's a house dog, I would do the suture. I might ask the veterinarian to do what I used to do. The sutures come with a special needle, and the sutures, the stit, the nylon suture cable, whatever you want to call it, we can get them with two cables put into the same needle because you have to guide this needle into some very tight areas. Not that hard once you know how to do it, but we would guide, and in the big dogs over 60 pounds, we would put in both sutures. So, right? Now, there's two reasons for this. One was I felt better. The second was that we expect these sutures to break within 6 months. The scar tissue that they set up is what's going to end up doing the work over time. So if we expected them to break over 6 months, I didn't want the single suture to break in 2 months on your dog. So we would put in two sutures, and it worked.
Wow,
so
that's great.
For your house pet, it's up to you. My recommendation, if you're in my office, would be to do the suture technique.
Caitlin, good luck with this.
Thank you.
Sooner the better, Caitlin.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Because the dog's in pain?
They're in pain, and they develop over time arthritis. So you stabilize the knee. It's an unstable knee joint. So you stabilize the knee, but arthritis, it's like mold. It just keeps growing. You know, it keeps growing. And you can't scrape it out.
So. All right. We're going to talk about frostbite right now in this cold affecting dogs and cats, and affecting cats in a particular way, the ears. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for listening. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented team, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Dr. Todd Friedland is back with us, our regular contributor. He's a Connecticut vet and always interesting when he's on the show because we tell stories, he gives advice, he gives of his knowledge freely. And we're going to go to the phones in just a second. Frostbite. Certainly, you've talked in the past about dogs' foot pads on the ice and snow, that can be rough on them. And so the idea is the length of the walk, right?
Yeah. Lori asked us this before the show, and I said, you know, first step is use common sense. And I took my dogs for walks, and there is something new about this. But if my dog started complaining, it was enough. So, you know, that was enough.
Holding the paw up
or whining or stop the dachshund would just sit down and say, hey, Todd, we're done. Now, if I was far away, I have a little 8-10 pound dachshund. I could pick him up and carry him away. Right now, there are chemicals in the stuff that's being put on the road. Salt will melt at 20 degrees or above. Will melt ice. And now the new chemicals, I think it's got a blue color to it.
Yeah.
Will liquefy the ice at about, I think, 0 degrees, okay? But it also has other problems. It eats metal, so it eats car parts and all of these things. And it tends to be a little more irritating, at least in my experience, to dog feet. So it's not a bad idea to have it can just be a litter box with a little bit of water in it to have your dog walk through, or you can wash the feet when your dog comes in the house. But as far as how long can my dog be outside, I think you have to know who your dog is and just use common sense.
Okay, and watch the dog. The dog will let you know.
The dog will let you know. And the frostbite issue, I mean,
typically cats,
it's not a big deal. But this year,
yeah,
it's been brutal. And
you said the ears on cats?
Well, that's the coldest part of it. That's the part of the cat with the least circulation. So the ears get cold and they get frostbitten. And it's very clear for me to know. If I see a cat, I'll know they've had frostbitten ears.
So when I see I've always thought those raggedy ears were from fights.
In my experience, if it's like notches, it's probably fights. You know, the cat scratch I'm doing with my hand. But if it's an even loss of the margin of the ear, it's not a white cat, it's probably frostbite.
Not a white cat.
Well, white cats can get frostbite like any other cat, but there's also a skin cancer that affects the edges of white cats because there's no pigment to protect from the UV light.
So their eyelids?
No, just their ear tips.
Just their ear tips.
Well, it can happen on the eyelids. It can. But I mean, I'm thinking back, over years and years and years, I probably saw it 10 times on eyes and hundreds of times on ears, the tumor. It's a nice tumor, if there is such a thing, because you can trim the ears and keep your cat indoors and it goes away.
Let's take a call, and then sure. I want to ask you about sweaters for your animals, whether these work. Sophie Faith Middleton with Dr. Freeland. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Faith. Dr. Welcome. Friedman, can I treat my cat's ear mites, and is there a health issue when she lies on top of the bed, even though she's on a separate sheet?
Ear mites are a parasite of cats and occasionally dogs, only occasionally dogs. So, yes, you can treat your cat. I can name some products. Your veterinarian will have. There's some really neat stuff out there. But if it were me, I would be using something called Revolution.
Thank you.
You bet.
What about the sheet?
Keeping the cat off of her own sheets and off. Is that what we understand, that you're not having the cat on your own bed
right.
sheets? Yeah. Ear mites are not going to bother you or the children or anybody else. And through your veterinarian, you get this product called Revolution, and it's very effective.
But not to leave the cat on top of the bed anyway?
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Because of bacteria?
Don't go there. Don't go there. Have the cat wherever you want. You've been exposed to – you should have listened to Colin this afternoon at 1 o'clock. You've been exposed to all these bacteria already. Don't buy antibacterial litter. Don't buy any of that stuff because it's just hogwash.
You can hear the germ show online.
That's right. Yeah, listen to Colin's show. It's hogwash. So just enjoy your cat. Okay?
All right.
Bye.
Thanks
Bye.
A lot. Stick with us for bacteria news here at
I
Public
love
Radio.
That. That was a great question, because there's all this marketing garbage out there about cat litter. You know, and mm-hmm. let me tell you something about cat litter. Cats are very, very fussy about where they go to the bathroom. Very fussy about where they go to the bathroom and how clean it is and is there another cat in the house or whatever. But these things that they're putting in cat litter, they smell better, they look better, they taste better. I don't know what they are. Cats can smell things so much more with so much more sensitivity than we can that we now treat something in veterinary medicine called litter box aversion. And I tell people, listen, I own an animal hospital with 30 cages. We look at the bottom shelf and we buy the clay litter. That's the old-fashioned litter, and all the cats pee and poop in the clay litter. Or if we want to use clumping litter, we buy – it's very hard to buy – unscented, unfettered, un-anything cat litter. Give it up, guys out there. The marketing people are just sucking you up. It's amazing.
Well, what about that cat window thing?
Oh, well, that was to protect your house from – this
from
is the
odor.
This is the – similar to an air conditioning
remember
box.
Remember it had a glass
right.
back
Right. It was about odor. It was about odor. It put the odor outside.
It had there was a piece of glass in the back so the
right.
cat could look outside. So if the cats are so particular
– some cats will not go to the bathroom if there's anything else – anybody else or anything else in the house watching them. Oh, it's fascinating. You know, I could have been a veterinarian just treating cat box problems my whole career.
Really, huh?
Sure, because we're giving them a fake bathroom, and we are pretending that we clean it.
Let's come back to germs.
Yeah, let's go.
Is there anything that we can catch from cats and dogs?
Oh, sure.
What?
Sure, sure. I mean, we can certainly talk about the biggie, which is rabies. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggie. So everybody that's listening to me has their cat vaccinated for rabies and up to date. And if not, don't listen to me anymore, because that's the most important thing you could ever do for you. Because the cat being vaccinated puts a barrier between the critters outside and you by being protected.
So if your cat is out there and gets attacked by something with rabies, a raccoon or whatever,
it'll be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So those are my cats. You just described my three outdoor cats. So what else? You know, you have the ectoparasites, the outside parasites, the fleas and the ticks. And then you have some bacterial diseases that could, on an open wound, create a problem for you. If the cat had a bacterial eye infection, say, you could get a little infection in your finger. And then there are the serious ones like leptospirosis, which if a dog has this disease, bacterial disease, it's spread in the urine of rodents, so it can be in any puddle that the dog drinks from. That urine is contagious to people. It's a horrible disease. I mean, there are many. There aren't many that we have to really sit around all day and worry about, but there are many. I'm actually going to be at Goodwin College doing holding a table about zoonotic
diseases.
Wait
a minute now. Yeah. It would seem, is that how prevalent is that rodent urine disease?
Okay, so where I live in Windham, we saw about 4 cases a year. If you're in a lepto.
In people?
No,
or
in the dogs. In the dogs, which makes it contagious to the family.
And did the people contract?
We were never aware of that happening. Most people don't contact dog urine, so it's not that big of an issue. But we did see it go from dog to dog within a household.
Was that like the Hanta virus? Is that what you're describing?
No, this is a bacteria, and it causes kidney and liver failure. It's horrible. Treatable.
Wow.
Early, treatable, but horrible.
But with all the rodents in the world, I mean, there's so many. It's out there. You would just think it's everywhere.
And there are different strains of lepto. We call it lepto for leptospirosis. There are different strains. So, the vaccines are somewhat effective, but the vaccines are strain-specific. It goes on and
listen,
on. Listen,
let's say I'm a first-time parent.
Yep.
I would be hearing this conversation so paranoid about having cats and dogs hearing this that, I mean, wouldn't that be terribly endangering to an infant?
This is like the woman that called and said she puts a sheet on her bed because of the bacteria on the cat. Meanwhile, the cat walks all over everything else. The bacteria are there. And it's, so the same thing with this. We have lepto. It's in different intensity in different areas, different strains in different areas. Mm-hmm. And if I were in an endemic area as a veterinarian, I would vaccinate more heavily for it. We never vaccinated for it because it was so unusual. We didn't feel it was it. So. We could focus on this, or we can focus on a disease called FOLD, which is in humans fear of Lyme disease. It's worse than Lyme disease. The fear. I don't get into the fear of these things that are,
I think I have FOLD.
Maybe. I don't want to get it, but I keep my kids inside 24/7.
I won't walk barefoot on the grass.
Well,
is
certainly
that a symptom of
No, that's a symptom of having chickens outside. That's what that is.
Or visiting geese.
Yeah, then you don't walk barefoot outside.
Bill, Faith Middleton with Dr. Todd Friedland. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. This show is awesome.
Thanks.
I just wanted to give a comment about doggy dementia. About 5 years ago, my dog, who's now, he's now 15, he's a husky shepherd mix, and he started getting up and not knowing what he was doing. And I recognized the signs because my mother sadly also has dementia. And my veterinarian up here in Northwest Connecticut, he tried Coladin. I don't know if he's heard, Dr. Friedland, you've heard of it?
Yes.
One of my favorite drugs.
Oh my gosh. I could not believe the difference. It was like 2 days later and the dog he'd get up and he'd look around like not knowing who anybody was. He'd wander around in circles, just want to lay down all day.
Yeah. You were lucky.
It was night and day.
Yeah, you were lucky.
I could not believe everything.
Yep.
Oh. It was awesome. So anybody else who's maybe had that experience, it was night and day. I couldn't believe it.
Coladin's one of our mystery drugs. We don't really know what it did to your dog, but we know that some dogs benefit from it. There are foods that can help your dog. There's the dementia diet made by the Hills prescription diet people. It's called BD, called Brain Diet. And there's a drug that I don't have a lot of faith in, and Anapril is it's called, but I never had a patient.
That was the first thing I had said. I did some research on my own, and I said something to my veterinarian, who was phenomenal. And he says, try this instead.
Question, because the Anapril never worked for me. These things also take the Coladin worked very fast. The Anapril and the Brain Diet, we tell people 3 to 6 months. So you are very lucky, but it wouldn't hurt to go on the Brain Diet.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. It's called BD.
He's doing really good right now. And again, I can't believe he's 15. I just can't.
So, Bill, thank you so much for calling in.
How fascinating.
Never dawned on me that a dog would have dementia. Of course they would.
Sure.
So here's the question. I was just reading an article about Alzheimer's, and they were discussing plaque in the brain, and that there are a couple of drugs now that have the potential to dissolve some of that plaque and then restore the connections, I guess. Is that what that drug does?
No, that drug...
How can a dog have dementia and then the next minute not have dementia?
It somehow, because I used it more in spinal cord issues in German Shepherds than I did in brain issues, but it was always worth a try because we don't know that there were any side effects. You can buy Coladin, I think, at GNC in the mall. It improves nerve transmission. Let's just say that in sort of a mysterious way. But to make it simple, it's a great product to try. with one caveat, not about the medicine. Dementia in dogs can be caused by liver disease, kidney disease, adrenal disease, all these things. So if you're thinking of dementia, think about a complete medical workup on your dog just in case there's something you can treat, something real. I hate that word, but something
real. 203-776-WNPR. Ian.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Quick question. So I'm not a first-time dog owner, but as in my family has always had dogs, but I'm looking to be a first-time dog owner. And my favorite dog in the world, and this is going on the earlier trend of large dog questions, is the Irish Wolfhound. I've loved it since I was 3 years old. It's my favorite dog in the world. I've known many of them. Now, a caveat for myself is I live in a home where my primary residence is on the second floor. We have plenty of space, but the issue is stairs, and I've read up on it, and I've read different things, people discussing back and forth. I just wanted to know your opinion on a giant breed like this, where you have to navigate some stairs.
Well, I'm imagining that this dog out where it lives, the herding dogs, it's a herding dog. It's a wonderful, wonderful dog. Never met one I didn't like because they're too big, so you have to like them because they stare you right in the face. But I would imagine out this dog will climb terrain like it isn't even there.
Okay.
Right? So let's put that. So my wife Mona and I ran into some herding dogs in Portugal. These dogs were walking up, and the cows couldn't walk where the dogs could walk. So I would think my whole thing with stairs is put something, if you can, I know you're in a condo or something, the stairs just need to have some traction, because once a dog slips on the stairs, they never want to go back on those stairs. They say,
makes sense.
So you just need some kind of traction and go for it. I mean, why wouldn't you take the dog to the park and run up the mountain?
Well, do these dogs have a joint or hip dysplasia vulnerability?
Well, the giant breeds, listen, if you buy a giant breed, you're going to have some issues. Okay, this is not a breed of nature. It's a man-made breed from who knows how many generations ago. The bigger you get, the smaller you get, the more issues you might get. Mm-hmm. They have problems with arthritis. They live a shorter life. They do all these things. As long as you're comfortable with that, then go for it.
Hmm.
All right.
Ian,
thank you so much.
You're
you
on
bet.
Your way. Let us know if you get that dog.
Will do. It's my favorite dog. It's not necessarily my wife's favorite dog. We negotiate.
Time for negotiation.
Are you telling me that you matter in your family?
Congratulations.
Good luck.
There have been concessions made.
Hey, sweaters, quickly,
yes.
As we draw to the end of the show. Do they work? Do
Absolutely.
The dogs like them?
Let's go back to the beginning
work?
Of the show. Common sense. Mm-hmm. I used to take my dachshund outside, and he would bury himself in the snow. Didn't care. Wouldn't, unless his feet hurt, he wouldn't come in. No sweater. My Shih Tzu, 2 steps outside, shivering. Sweater. Stopped shivering right after the sweater.
So people,
yeah, that's
these
right.
dogs are different. It's not just size.
No,
it circulation?
No, if my big dog shivered, if I had, let's say, an Afghan,
could be a thyroid issue, right?
Well, you want to talk to your veterinarian about eliminating medical disease, yes. But in general, if a dog is healthy and walks outside and shivers, then get a sweater. There's another reason to get a sweater. If you think your dog's more comfortable in a sweater, get a sweater.
Right, and then there's fashion.
Coats. Oh, yeah. I don't even want to tell you what we had for Pepper. It was amazing.
It was a Burberry.
Raincoats. We had a Sherpa thing. We had all that.
It's so great to see you,
Thank
as
you
always.
So much.
I just, every time, just love it. Learned so much every single time. Dr. Todd Friedland, who lives in Windham, Connecticut, and has been a vet and a contributor on the show for years and years and years. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, great vet articles online right now, Value Wines, you name it, at the Faith Middleton Show, WNPR.org. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.